Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Podcast for the week of April 9th. I'm your host, William Liu, joined on the program by my Pound the Rock podcast co-host, Joe Wolfhunt. Joe.
What's going on, man?
We're going to plug the shit out of that podcast, this podcast.
Yeah, most definitely. Right off the jump, too. That's pretty aggressive.
Joe, before we talk about Raptors stuff, what is Pound the Rock? Obviously, Raptors fans know what Pound the Rock is, but what is this podcast? Where is it, and what do we talk about?
Pound the Rock is a new weekly NBA podcast on the Score.
Comes out Mondays.
Hosted by yours truly, you, and OG Raptor blogger Joey Cash,
Joe
Cacciaro. We've done one ep, and... I feel like it's a pretty good mix of banter and more serious analysis, and I think we're gonna have a good run.
Yeah, technically we're not allowed to admit that we're Raptors fans, but I think it'll be pretty obvious.
A quick Google search will reveal all.
Yeah, I think the three of us have all tweeted at some point, "Fuck the Celtics." So.
the podcast is to prove that we can still talk objectively about them, and
that's right.
I feel we still can when the situation calls for it.
Yeah, of course. Look, the Celtics have had a nice year. They really overcome injuries. I mean, Brad Stevens did a hell of a job to win second in Coach of the Year, and it's just a shame that he had to compete against Dwayne Casey, who's going to win 60 games. It's a tough life.
And also fuck the Celtics.
All right. Check out that podcast. It'll come out tomorrow afternoon. That's tomorrow being Monday. Right now, we're here to talk about the Toronto Raptors, which, everyone's calm now, right? 3-0 week?
I would hope so. I mean, pretty comfortable and confidence-inspiring wins, I think, over Boston and Indiana. Granted, both those teams coming in on the second night of back-to-backs. Raptors are also on the second night of back-to-back in that Boston game, but
right.
Very shorthanded Celtics team and, like, pretty ragged Pacers team, but nevertheless, I mean, they took care of business, have been playing really good defense, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's been nice to see some guys who were struggling start to come out of their funks a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So definitely people should feel better than they did a couple weeks ago when it was all doom and gloom after that Cavs game. So,
yo, by the way, it feels like it's been a couple weeks ago, but it was actually just Tuesday that the Raptors lost to the Cavs. Holy shit.
Wow.
It feels like a lifetime ago. I can't remember what losing feels like anymore because we just got three more wins.
Yeah, I mean, that just goes to show you how, like, immediate and reactionary all this shit is, because everyone was in a pretty dark place, I think, after that Cleveland game. And
they didn't even try that hard. That was the weird thing. And Kyle Lowry was going to Villanova and stuff, or going to San Antonio. I mean,
yeah,
come on, man.
But yeah, I mean, the Raps, they still haven't lost more than two games in a row all season. So if...
pretty good.
I mean, it's always been, I think, in the DNA of this team, where like they'll have a rough outing or even, you know, like a mini slump, and they always come out of it pretty strong. They've been really good at bouncing back, and I think, that's, I mean, whatever the case, like they seem to be back to kind of playing with a little bit of an edge and like more defensive intensity than they had during that little swoon.
Right.
And starting season threes go down again. I mean, I don't know how much of that's going to carry over, but definitely you'd rather them head into the playoffs on a bit of a winning streak than the opposite. And, you know, nailing down that one seed is allowing them to rest guys too, which is nice.
That's true. The Raptors have nailed down the one seed. We've secured home court throughout the East playoffs. Sorry, that's just what the one seed means.
yeah.
Yeah, look, it's late. It's late. I had a glass of wine with dinner. I enjoyed the shit out of that Magic game. It's very, very stress-free. Yeah, I mean, look, the first time in franchise history. We should probably hang a banner for that. You know, we should celebrate the fact that the Raptors have shattered their previous franchise high for wins. We're now at 58. It's great.
Hang a banner for that.
Sure. Yeah, 58. Hang it for 59 when we win tomorrow against the Pistons, and maybe hang 60 when we go to Miami. I don't understand. I don't even know who's going to go to Miami.
Hang when we win game one. Like, really, how many banners can we be hanging this season? Let's,
honestly, we should celebrate every small accomplishment. I'm completely down for that.
Yeah, game one banner.
Yeah, look, for sure. I mean, look, the Leafs got like 25 numbers retired up there. I'm sure the game one is going to be more significant than like what, you know, Matt Sundin. Yeah. That's not true. Matt Sundin, respect. All respect to Matt Sundin.
It'll be more significant than the Bon Jovi banner. I think we can say that with some reasonable confidence.
Exactly. Anyway, look, I want to talk about the playoffs, but realistically, we don't really know who's going to be, so it's kind of pointless to talk about the playoffs now. It's kind of pointless to worry about who it's going to be. You know, once everything is decided like that, probably Thursday or Friday, you know, I'm going to do another podcast with either Blake or someone else to do a playoff preview. So if you're waiting for the playoff preview, just wait until we actually figure out who the Raptors are going to play in the first round. But in this podcast, we're going to look back. Joe and I are going to look back on the Raptors season and how glorious it was, and we're going to hand out some awards. Obviously, things like Coach of the Year, we can't hand out to the Raptors because, you know, whatever. I guess there's a strong contention, actually, between Dwayne Casey and Jerry Stackhouse, but...
Rex Kalamian, you know, Rex. Nick Nurse.
Yeah, there you go. Nick Nurse, baby. The offensive guru, the genius.
You reshaped the offense.
Finally, yeah. Man. It's been a while.
Yeah.
But we will hand out the other awards. So let's start with MVP.
Am I allowed to pick Masai Ujiri?
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean,
what was Masai's PR this season, bro?
Like off the charts, man. Yeah. His efficiency, just as far as I mean, man, like he's been absolved for a lot of picks that I think. Look, I was guilty of calling Jakob Poeltl an unsexy and vanilla draft pick. I've been eating crow on that, and I'm now, you know, driving the Jakob Poeltl bandwagon. Mm-hmm. Pascal Siakam, I thought, you know, a lot of people considered that a reach, even at number 27. That obviously has proven not to be the case. And honestly, just the decision to bring the band back and, you know, to re-up with Kyle, to re-up with Serge, to bring Dwayne Casey back, and to trust that internally the team could make the leap that it did without really overhauling the personnel. I think it speaks volumes just about the kind of trust that he's instilled in the organization. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, man. I just don't think there are a lot of executives in the league that could have done what he did, looked at the roster that he had and actually seen this happening or seen it as being possible, that he could run it back, but do it in a completely different way and have the kind of success that they've had. So maybe that's a bit of a cop-out. I like that.
Someone had to have the vision for all this to happen, right? And I think Masai, honestly, if you probably ask Masai, like, if you gave him truth serum, he'd probably tell you, like, I can't believe how good some of these guys are.
Yeah.
But, I mean, seriously, man. I mean, I think he, like, without that vision of seeing what is still here, like, it's very important to not throw out the baby with the bathwater in this case. And, you know, there was a lot here. There really was. And, you know, as long as the Raptors were able to change the way they play and figure out, you know, how to maximize this roster and how to develop a new identity. And I think the young guys have done that. Like, I mean, Masai is very up there with for MVP for sure.
Yeah, I mean, part of it too is I just like don't really feel like litigating the whole Lowry and DeRozan thing.
Okay.
Right. Because I don't know. I feel like I can't pick between them for one thing, and for another thing, I feel like they're when people start debating between those two guys, their heels tend to get dug in, and it sometimes turns hostile. And I just think both those guys have been amazing, and both deserve a ton of credit for the way that they've bought in and the way that they've kind of led this team. But I don't know, man. I like do you have a pick between like one of those two guys, or do you have a different pick for MVP?
I'm going with DeMar. I think DeMar is the one player that had to change his game the most. Mm-hmm. Because his game was sort of the closest to sort of what the old identity of the Raptors was. And it's not saying that like it was bad necessarily. Like DeMar had a fantastic year last year. He really did. He earned all NBA honors and rightfully so. He carried the team when the team was down. He started off like crazy, scored like 30 straight in the first like 9 games of the year. And finished strong too, you know, hitting a couple of key jumpers like in New York, Washington and stuff like that. But I mean, look, he had, like, it's really hard after a player has a career year like that in the middle of his prime to come to him and say, look, we need you to change your game. And mm-hmm. for that star to be humble enough to like accept that message and change for the good of the team. And he did. And it's not like he was the one that, you know, that's leadership really, right? Like that's some shit that's not necessarily on him because he was already more than doing his part for the team. But for him to change his game and to, you know, facilitate a new style where, you know, the Raptors ranked 6th in offense this year. They were dead last year, right? Like, the Raptors play much faster than four. DeMar's been made
in,
so...
In assists, you mean, not...
Oh, yeah, in total assists. Offense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think their assists per game, I think they were, like, behind, like, the Phoenix Suns. Let me just quickly look that up. The Raptors... No, the Raptors were dead last in assists per game last year, too. Jesus Christ.
And their, like, assist rate, like, their percentage of assisted baskets was, like, the lowest, I think, in 13 years. So it was... It was, like, a historically... isolation
man.
Heavy offense, yeah.
Look at this number. 18.5 assists per game. That is so ugly, man. I mean, this season the Raptors are at 24.3, so that's up 6 assists. And, like, how many games have there been, like, 30 assists? Like, just, it comes regularly to the team. And DeMar has, you know, been a huge part of that. He's been so willing to move the ball. The Raptors passed the ball on average. Last year was 270 passes per game. This year, 300. Part of that speaks to the fact that they're playing faster. But, you know, a lot of that has come with DeMar changing his game. And there's been very few games where DeMar has been forcing a shot, quote-unquote, in an opportunity where the Raptors didn't necessarily need him to. And that used to be the biggest knock against DeMar was that sometimes, you know, he would just go into that mode where I need to get a bucket. Mm-hmm. You know? DeMar, like you said, sure. Man, he's strictly on demand at this point. If the team needs a bucket, he's going to get the bucket. Otherwise, he's going to move the ball. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people, especially earlier in the season, were, like, focused on the three-point shooting.
Right.
And less so on the playmaking. And to me, that's the biggest area where he's upped his game this year. It's just, like, finding guys out of the pick and roll, mm-hmm. and, like, making those skip passes to the corner, like, really expanding his playmaking role. And that's unlocked a lot of things for the offense, for sure.
Yeah.
So I do give him a lot of credit for that. I do think that Lowry is still like a little bit more important.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Lowry has his hands in everything. Plus Lowry's, you know, a very impactful team defender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, there've been a lot of games where DeMar's really disappeared defensively. So I don't know. I don't know how I would pick between them, but I think they're both deserving mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, you know, it's really like a joint effort, right? Like, I don't think it could work without either one of them. So, I give them both a ton of credit.
That's right. Better together.
No
like,
doubt.
Like that, all-star campaign for Kyle Lowry went. That was strictly for Kyle Lowry. DeMar was going to get in regardless. It's like, yo, bring Kyle, please. Come on. Don't make bromance moments. Yeah. Okay. Next up. Most improved. So there's a lot of players that could really go on this list.
This is like the most difficult one for me. And I think it's like between four guys.
Okay. Who the four?
To me, I think it's between Fred,
yep.
Pascal,
yep.
DeMar, and JV. Okay. And honestly, I kind of think it's JV. Like,
I think
that's
snap.
My pick.
Okay. Okay.
Because he's the guy that I expected it from the least, I think. You know, he was a guy where I looked at him at the start of the season and thought, this is a guy who is who he is.
Okay.
And I didn't necessarily see a ton of growth potential there.
Right.
And I feel like just like the number of different areas in which he's made small steps forward.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's one area where he's made like one tremendous leap aside from the 3-point shooting, but even then that's such a, like a tiny sample of it.
It's a novelty thing, the 3-point
yeah.
shooting. It's nice. It's a nice free bucket and it matters, but it's yeah.
But just like the little small strides he's made in like pretty much every aspect of the game, like the increased awareness that he's playing with, you know, as far as being able to pass the ball, like they're using him a little bit more at the elbows, and I think he's like been a much more adept
right.
Playmaker, and just like making smarter decisions, they've gone a little bit more conservative with the pick and roll defense, and I think he's done a really good job, like when he's dropping back and playing close to the basket.
I mean that Houston game.
That Houston game, yeah, it was really a perfect distillation of all the improvements that he's made. Like he's done a better job, I think, staying on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in just like pretty much every area, he's managed to improve a little bit, and it's made him a better rounded player who's able to stay on the floor in crunch time, able to make an impact at both ends of the floor, and you know, just like a guy you can rely on to make good decisions, you know, like whether it's in the 4-on-3 out of the pick and roll, which is like something that like on the short roll, he really wasn't able to do in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, whether it's being able to kind of drop back and play like you saw in that Rockets game, like really be able to kind of, stay in front of a ball handler while also not losing track of the roll man, like stuff like that. He's just improved by leaps and bounds, I think. So
yeah, for sure,
he's my guy.
Yeah, it's a really good pick. I mean, I think yeah, like you mentioned, there's a lot of guys that can be in consideration here because so many players took a leap forward. But the one guy I was surprised you didn't mention was Jakob Poeltl, because like he has like first off, he's not fouling out of every single game anymore, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a part of that was reputation, because I never felt like he was that, like, reckless or bumbling. But, I mean, like, Poeltl has gotten so much better on defense. You know, like, he's had so many games where he's single-handedly changed the result of it just with his activity and his mobility. Like, you think of those Warriors games, I mean, like, Poeltl was huge in both of those ones. You know, he was great in the Denver game just recently as well. I mean, he was just a monster in that one after, you know, dealing some foul trouble, ironically. But his finishing has become so much better. I mean, Poeltl is shooting 65% from the field. 65,
yeah.
Man. You know, he's even got that surprising little baseline jumper. He's always been so good on the offensive glass. He's, you know, developing that chemistry. So, I mean, I think Poeltl, you know, deserves some love. Obviously, Fred is someone that, you know, I think it's Fred, honestly. I do think it's Fred because just like, you know, who was this guy? He was our four-string point guard that we carried around kind of, we never even saw him really, that much last season. And for him to sort of come in and basically be the most important player off that bench in terms of just, not necessarily with the numbers, but, you know, just setting the tone for the whole bench as a whole, his attitude, the way he moves the ball, how intense he is, defending, how intense he is just doing anything ever in life. you know, how much he grooms himself and looks proper. I think that's rubbed off nicely on DeLon Wright. DeLon has really glowed up. Yeah, I mean, Fred VanVleet, of course,
came out
of nowhere, bro.
The most profiled man in the NBA this season,
yes.
I think, it's safe to say.
His agent is great. I don't know who it is because Andy Miller's gone. But whoever it is currently, great job.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, definitely no qualms with that pick either. Like, I think it's crazy that at the start of the season, a lot of us were kind of bagging on Dwayne Casey for playing VanVleet as much as he did.
I mean, he had a really bad first 10 games of the season, but if you take that out,
yeah.
He's been, like, insanely good.
I mean, this dude was a four-string point guard last year, you know, and came into this year as a third-string point guard that I don't think anybody really expected to be a significant part of the team, let alone the vital part of the team that he became.
Yeah.
And it's pretty incredible because he's out there in crunch time almost every game.
Like almost every game.
He closes games all the time, and that's nuts. He surprised me, and I think pretty much everybody else in the Raptors community. So definitely a good pick as well.
We gotta show some love to Pascal as well. I mean,
yeah, that's what I mean. This is like a there's a lot of competition for this award internally. So
all right, how about we just put together the top three then?
Okay, so I mean, yeah, my top three would I think go JV and then Fred and then Siakam.
Okay, I will go Fred, Siakam, and then JV.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, even someone like Serge Ibaka, like, there's been a lot of growth in his game. Or at least attempts to grow in his game. Whether that's, like, completely transformed is not consistent, but, you know, it is what it is. Seriously, I commend a guy who was 28 years old and he's, you know, changing himself.
In the middle of his career. DeMar, too, man.
DeMar?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, Dwayne Casey, like.
Dwayne Casey for most improved. Yo, that would have been, that's a crazy pick. Oh, I might have to revise
my
thing.
I'm just saying,
now.
I think that's really what has been so special about this season, I think, is, you pretty much point to anybody, inside the organization with the possible exception of Norm and say, like, this guy grew in meaningful ways this season, so.
And Norm? Norm grew in endorsements, that's for sure.
Okay, well.
Yeah, I mean, Twizzlers, Norm, bro, Norm, get that money, Norm.
He's looked better of late. Let's give him some love.
He comes in. He's physical. He trails a wing for a while, and then he makes a bad decision on offense. And fine. except today against the Magic, he was great. I'm happy for him. I'm really happy for him. Next one, sixth man. Again, a lot of options.
Yeah, a lot of options. It's really hard to separate them out, but this one I will go with Fred just because I think. He's the guy who I think the Raptors have leaned on the most.
For sure.
And more than any of those other guys, like, they rely on him, you know, in crunch time to close games, and, he's the guy who I feel like has been able to steady the ship, and, like, he feels to me like the guy who captains those bench units more than anybody else. Like, sometimes it's Pascal, sometimes it's DeLon, but those guys also sometimes have a tendency to disappear a little bit, and I feel like that has happened less with Fred than it's happened with anybody else.
Yeah, I agree. I think that one's pretty obvious to me with Fred. Although Siakam is also very close in this game. But the award I want to give Siakam to is Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, 100%.
He's our best individual defender, period.
Yeah,
and help defender. Like, if you put on-ball plus help defense, that's Siakam.
It's wild. This is like another one where I feel like I probably want to put together a three-person ballot because again, like, a lot of deserving guys. But
let's make the case for Siakam first, and then let's add some more love on top of that.
Okay, Siakam, like, on ball is just ridiculous to me. Like, his ability to, like, move his feet and, like, the activity of his hands. Guys like can't really get by him or score on him one on one. Like, you see guys like Carmelo Anthony and Kevin Love, and, like, even in some cases LeBron James, like, try and score on him one on one, and it's like they just can't really find their way around him.
Yeah.
And you know, he can switch pretty much 1 through 4. In some cases 1 through 5. Like, bigger centers are obviously going to give him some trouble, but he can switch across at least 4 positions, and again, like you said, like, his help defense has also been really good, and he always knows where to be. He's extremely fast.
Crazy. One-man fast break.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I love most about Siakam is that, like, he's able to turn that, like, crazy defensive pressure immediately into a fast break.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know if that necessarily should factor into Defensive Player of the Year, but, like, how impactful that defense is immediately translated to offense, I feel like, is part of that defense that he does. But, he's our best defender. I don't think it's even that close, necessarily. I mean, the Raptors have a lot of good defenders, but because Siakam is consistently in those, the best lineups defensively, I mean, Siakam's a constant. We've seen him close some games. he's kind of the guy for us right now, right? Like that 3-4, you know, tweener type. And that's Siakam's cover. And, you know, that's obviously been a hole for the Raptors for a long time. That was a big one for the Raptors coming into the season. I thought that's where we were weakest. And it's, to some extent, I still do. But, you know, not having that 3-4 type after PJ Tucker decided to sign in Houston, like, you know, that had to be, if Siakam didn't step into that role, there would have been a lot more of these long nights because he is kind of the last line of defense for guys like that. So,
yeah, for sure. There have also just been like so many games where the team has been kind of like dragging their feet and lacking energy.
Yeah, and he picks it up.
That's just never ever been him. Not one night this season. So,
yeah,
he deserves a ton of credit. I really want to throw some love Jakob Poeltl's way as well, fantastic. Because he's become such a good rim protector.
Yeah,
and he's really figured out how to like get to his spots, go straight up, and even when he's not blocking shots, which, you know, he's become a really good shot blocker as well, but even when he's not blocking shots, he's changing shots at the rim. Mm-hmm. And if you look at, like, opponent field goal percentage at the rim, he, among, like, you know, high-volume rim defenders, he's fourth in the league.
That's fantastic.
Ahead of Rudy Gobert, like ahead of Anthony Davis, just behind Joel Embiid, and Pau Gasol, weirdly enough.
That's more the Spurs system now, that one.
Yeah. but yeah, he's like, makes such an impact defending at the rim. And it was also like, you know, as a switch guy is also pretty good. He moves his feet really well. Again, like as a helper, just always very prompt, quick with his rotations, always in the right spot. I do think like he still fouls too much, and again, he doesn't really get the benefit of the whistle, even though he's not a rookie anymore. He still gets some cheap calls against him. I think he could rely on his feet even more than he does because he does get kind of handsy sometimes, and he also can get bullied by bigger dudes. Right. But
I mean, honestly, even part of that is also just a testament to like he's always in position to challenge, and he always challenges.
Yeah.
Always, man.
Yeah, for sure. So he would be number two on my ballot, and I think number three I would put DeLon, who probably doesn't get enough credit for what he does at the defensive end. Like that, what he did in that Celtics game was just insane.
Insane, bro. He looked like Jason Kidd with that 8.9 rebound, 8 assist game with fantastic defense.
Yeah, and like just, he gets some of the most incredible steals, I think, that I've ever seen. Like, from, like, he'll be getting just straight posted up and not seem like he has any angle or any position to make a play on the ball, and will just like come from out of nowhere to poke it loose or to just like outright steal it. And it's wild, man. His anticipation is amazing. His hands on defense are amazing. Like, he gets more deflections, I think, than anybody on the team.
Yeah. I mean, if you add up steals and blocks per 36 minutes, DeLon Wright is tops. 1.8 steals per 36 and 0.9 blocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, which for a guard is it's pretty nice.
Yeah. Although, if you look at Jakob Poeltl, 2.4 blocks per 36 minutes with 0.9 steals. I guess Jak is number one, and then, you know, everyone else is DeLon Wright.
Yeah. But, well, I think Bebe would be number one, to be honest.
Yeah, but Bebe, I mean, Bebe's played 400 minutes. Yo, his per 36 numbers are nuts. 3.8 blocks and 2 steals.
Yeah.
Shout out to Bebe for coming in and basically being a 5-hour energy drink. He just is like,
or sometimes being like the come down from a 5-hour energy drink.
Well, yeah, you know, that's if you play Bebe in the second half. First half Bebe is phenomenal. Second quarter Bebe is like the best thing you could ever do.
Yeah.
Just put Bebe in the game. Yeah, I mean, I want to give some love to Poeltl as well, for sure. Actually, I want to give some love to Fred VanVleet as well, man. I mean, his on-ball defense. Like, I'm thinking of that play against Chris Paul.
Yep.
Yeah, like, just like...
That was special.
Picking guys up full court, just that toughness that he has. I mean, like, he's, you know, I mean, like, on-ball defense, he's phenomenal. And you know, if only he was a little bit taller, it'd be a little bit better. But seriously, he's great at picking guys clean, going the other way. But also, I really do love the fact that he's so good at helping into the paint, into post-ups. Yeah. Like, that used to be, like, I don't know, for some reason, the Raptors played a ton of bigs in November. And, like, yeah, November and December, the Raptors played a lot of big men for some reason that wanted to post up. And, you know, that was used. That used to be an effective strategy against the Raptors a little bit, where the Raptors would switch so heavily in the start of the season that there were a lot of these mismatches, and even wings would try to post up, and there was always VanVleet around the corner waiting to just like pick off and disrupt post ups. And he's such a good help defender. I mean, he's learned to take charges as well. You know, he's actually a solid rebounder, even though he's kind of short. I mean, he's very feisty. He fights for loose balls. He's like, he always comes up with loose balls. So I don't know, man. VanVleet is defensively is pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't think he's as good as DeLon Wright though. Like DeLon Wright, like peak, like, I mean, like when DeLon's engaged, he's, you know, the best defensive point guard on this team, which is saying a lot.
Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, VanVleet is just like Lowry. It's crazy, and I know it seems like a little bit facile to say that, because they both play for the Raptors, but they really just do, like, there's so much overlap there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way that Fred, like, pushes bigger guys out of the post, the way that he fights through screens, and like you were saying, yeah, my favorite thing about his defense this year has been just, like, the timing on his double teams.
Yeah.
And I specifically remember, like, the game against the Pelicans early in the year when Boogie, like, just, like, kept trying to post up and just kept getting stripped. I think he had, like, 8 turnovers in that game.
Yeah.
And a bunch of them were forced by Fred just, like, crashing down at the right time. It's cool, man. Yeah, I just, like, love talking about these guys. It's really cool that we have such a good and fun team.
It's been such a fun regular season. Yeah. And then last thing is just your top 5 games/moments of the year. Obviously, there's a lot to pick from.
Yeah.
But let's just build the top 5 instead of just each presenting a top 5. I think we could both agree that the second Houston win is up there.
Yeah, I would put that at number 1 just because of the...
That game made us feel like we were legit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They were on like a 17 or 18 game winning streak.
Yeah.
And we beat them. Like, flat out, we beat them. It wasn't no excuses, nothing like that. We just beat them, period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, like, you know, like, the stakes were really high, and then I thought about it. Like, there weren't really any stakes on that game. You know, the Raps were solidly first in the East.
Yeah, so, but like, I mean, like...
In the grand scheme of things, the game didn't actually have any sort of, like, tangible stakes, but it was more, like you were saying, you know, like proving something and making a statement. And there were a lot of eyeballs on that game, obviously.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man, like anytime you can end a 17 game winning streak, that's pretty insane.
Yo, especially since Houston, right after the 17 game win streak got snapped by the Raptors, went on for another 10, like 11 game win streak.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So they had, like, you know, even early in the season when the Raps went to Houston and beat them.
Yeah.
That basically preceded a stretch where they went like 23-1 also.
Yeah.
There were these like 2 incredible runs that they went on that were broken up only by having to play the Raps, which is super cool.
Yeah.
That would be my number 1. I don't think anything could top that, just for drama, like for the quality of the game from start to finish.
I'm super confident that if somehow there was a Rockets Raptors finals, the Raptors could win that and would win that. I'm super confident. I'm super confident for that. I think we defend the Rockets really well.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we have this season. You know, you don't know what kind of adjustments they would make, and I think that's what would sort of scare me, is like, at the end of the day, they still do have what I would consider a pretty significant talent edge. So
yeah, for sure.
If they were just able to adjust and learn from some of their mistakes, then, you know, the Raptors might be boned, but I would certainly feel more confident in that matchup than I would in a matchup against the Warriors.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, we're being smacked by the Warriors. It's not close.
But speaking of the Warriors, I feel like that near comeback...
at the ACC?
Despite the fact that they didn't win, that would probably be in my top 5 as well. That second half was as much fun as I've had watching basketball in... my entire life, really.
Like, yeah.
That was ridiculous.
We were getting killed, like murdered. Like,
yeah.
David West was carving us.
They're down 27 at halftime.
David West with his geriatric ass hands, just shakily drinking, you know.
Just hitting 17 footers.
Nonstop, bro. It was disgusting.
Yeah.
It was disgusting. And then we launched that ridiculous comeback. And honestly, like, Personally, I'm not going to put that on the list just because I felt like the Warriors were always in control of that game by the end, because they went to that KD Steph pick and roll and they just got two buckets and it was over for the Raptors.
Yeah.
But
there were like a lot of small things that could have turned that. You know, like DeMar.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Draymond, like recognizing that pick and roll they were going to run and like switching assignments, so that he ended up switched on to DeMar.
In the middle of the play, like, how did he... Yeah, he saw that CJ Miles coming to the screen, right?
Yeah, but I mean, DeMar, takes that mid-range jumper that, I don't know, I thought they should have just, like, rescreened and got the switch they wanted. But they were running out of time, though. Yeah, I think they had enough time to do it, but either way, like, you know, there was that shot, there was, like, the Pirtle block that got called for a foul on Steph.
Clean block, bro. Oh, my God, that was the most painful clean block called a foul since Bismack blocked LeBron.
Yeah. So, I don't know if they were, like, the Warriors were totally in control of that game. There were definitely some moments where I felt like the Raps had a chance to take it. But just the fact that they ended up in that game at the end was pretty incredible.
Dude, they got outscored 81. 81 to 54 in the first half.
Yeah.
81 to 54, and the Raptors ended up launching that comeback. Fred VanVleet, huge in that comeback. That was definitely one of the top games of the year. I'm going to submit the DeMar 52 points against the Bucks.
For sure.
OT.
Yeah.
Just an awesome, awesome game. You know, DeMar hitting those shots. I mean, first off, a very underrated, enjoyable part of that game was how much DeMar was scoring on Chris Middleton. Like,
yeah, there was a little extra sauce.
Ben, man. Ben Golliver of SI was just watching that game in horror. Watching that game in horror, man. Elite 3-and-D player. Yeah. Could not.
The RPM god.
I don't even know if his RPM's that great anymore, to be honest, because RPMs fluctuate so high every year. But yeah. No, but seriously, though, that was just a, like, you know, just a really fun game. It was at the ACC as well. Great atmosphere. DeMar,
honestly,
snapping.
Every game against the Bucks this year has been pretty incredible for, you know, like there was obviously DeMar dropping 52.
Right.
Then the game they lost still like featured like a pretty awesome comeback and Jonas's game tying dunk at the buzzer.
JV's game tying dunk. It should have been an and one to win the game.
Should have been. I mean, that would have made it that much more incredible, obviously. and then the game that they the Raps just absolutely eviscerated them in Milwaukee when Jonas had 20 and 9 in the third quarter alone.
Oh yeah, that's right, man. This honestly, this season has so many great wins, man.
Yeah, but pretty much every game against the Bucks has been a heater.
Yeah, for sure.
And
be mad stressful in the playoffs, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so so far we agree on two: the Houston game, DeMar goes 52. What about the Pistons game? Overtime again. I think just the way that game got sent to OT, and then the way that game ended.
Yeah.
Bro, DeMar DeRozan driving the length of the floor to dunk all over Anthony Tolliver.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that game was like a top five game, because it was actually like really frustrating for like, you know, 3.5 quarters until shit just went totally bonkers at the end of the game. But yeah, the way that it ended, I think, probably bumped it up into elite territory. Not just that DeMar dunk, but also the Fred shot that sealed the win.
Yeah, DeMar driving the floor to the court again there to find the Fred in the corner.
Yeah.
Looking off CJ, which is good. CJ, I feel like, not a very clutch shooter, but it is. Yeah, anyway.
But yeah, before that, I feel like it was like Ish Smith draining random threes.
No, it was Blake Griffin. For some reason, we couldn't stop Blake Griffin in the post. He just kept doing that stupid Blake Griffin move where he's just super muscular and he just spins into your body and goes.
Yeah, that's right. That was like one of the few guys that Siakam couldn't handle. He was like abusing Siakam in the post.
I thought they should have tried Pirtle in that game.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But, that was like, extremely fun. Obviously, the last few minutes of that game were insane.
Yeah,
I think we got to include that 34-point slap over the Cavs.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, look, I don't give a shit what condition the Cavs were in. I don't care how much dysfunction there was. I don't care how much Isaiah Thomas was, you know, snitching to Woj. I don't care about that. The Raptors smacked the Cavaliers by 34 points, and I needed everyone to acknowledge it. It was. I mean, personally, it was phenomenal because I got to watch the game in Mississauga with Vivek and Harsh, and that was We got to record a podcast in Vivek's Hyundai in the parking lot. probably the most fun reaction podcast we did. But yeah, seriously, man, that game was just crazy. Like the way we jumped on them pretty much from, like, after 6 minutes, the Raptors jumped all over the Cavaliers. LeBron wasn't interested. He's like, this whole team is full of waste men. And like, man, they just clobbered them. It was honestly, I felt bad for the Cavs after that game. I'm like, come on, have some dignity. I lost by 34 points.
The way that it happened, too, just made it that much more incredible, because what really blew the game open was this insane run by this lineup of Fred, DeLon, Lorenzo Brown, Poeltl, and Siakam. That was the lineup that blew that game open, and it was incredible. Like, national TV game, I think the Raptors' first national TV game of the year.
Yeah.
And you know, your U.S. national TV audience is just tuning in to see the Cavs get absolutely blasted by guys I'm sure that they'd never heard of before.
Right. And this is two games after Kyle Lowry broke his ass in the Nets game.
Yeah.
And then like, the Raptors lost against the Heat. Yeah, and then Serge got himself suspended because he started fighting with James Johnson in that Heat game, which was still kind of a bullshit loss because, you know, you got Wayne Ellington hitting the game winner on a layup. But, yeah, I mean, the Raptors bounced back incredibly. Just an incredible bounce back by a shorthanded team. Like, no Serge, no Lowry. DeMar didn't even go off that much. It was just the bench. The bench just destroyed them. Lorenzo Brown really had 6 points. Malcolm Miller came in, made his Raptors debut, hit 2 threes. I mean, yeah, that's definitely a top five.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think what else. I got, like, there have been a lot of good games that weren't especially memorable, but they were just, like, really enjoyable to watch. Like, really early in the season, there was that game against the Blazers.
Oh, man, when we held the Blazers to no baskets until, like, 6 seconds left.
Evan Turner got six points in the third quarter or the second quarter.
6 points and just free throw. It could have been four points and just free throw. Like, that would have been crazy.
But, yeah, like, that was – and that sticks out to me because I remember watching that game, and that was kind of when it clicked for me that the team could actually be – pretty special.
Yeah.
And that was a huge Bebe game too. Like Bebe just absolutely went off in that game.
No, the Bebe games are fun. There's a lot of these games to choose from. I think the top four is pretty definitive, in terms of just like most memorable moments. But like, you know, even things like the Knicks game, that was really fun. By the way, the Cavaliers game, 133, that was the Raptors season high for scoring. And that was in regulation. 133 in regulation. Raptors back in the Knicks, that was fun.
Yeah,
you know, beating the Blazers the second time at home was also really great to see. That was during a dominant run for the Raptors.
That was when they were just absolutely like smacking everybody.
Yeah, I mean, yo, there was a while the Raptors smacked every single team by 15 points. It was crazy. Yeah. The Hornets, like that was the game where OG went off for like 6 threes, and then Kyle Lowry said he started calling him Ray Allen.
Yeah,
Baby Ray. Come on. Yo. Put some respect on Ray Allen in this DM game.
Oh, man, yeah. yeah, I think we got to include that Celtics game when – I think it was an ESPN game when we beat them by 20 points.
Oh, that's right. That's probably definitely in there. I just, like – I didn't see that live, so I didn't really get the full, like – enjoyment of it, because I stupidly chose to take vacation. Actually, I didn't stupidly. It was a great vacation, but yeah. How was it live for you?
It was incredible. They, you know, it had been billed as this huge titanic clash. You know, the top two teams in the East.
Mm-hmm. Raptors were hot in their tails.
Yeah, and I can't remember actually if it was a national TV game or not. But
no, it was. It was.
Yeah.
It was one of those Mark Jones, Hubie Brown productions.
Right.
Hubie loves it.
And, Hubie's been on, like, a lot of Raptors broadcasts this year, and I enjoy him.
Hubie mentioned that Pascal Siakam was G League Finals MVP, like, on national broadcast, and I was like, what?
Yeah, man does his research.
That's a lot of research. He's reading Blake Murphy columns, man. Jesus Christ.
But yeah, that was another game where the bench just like totally took over in the second quarter and the game was over by halftime. It was incredibly fun and like they were healthy in that game. I mean, obviously no Hayward, but they had their full complement of players outside of that and they just got beat really, really bad. And that was really fun just because for so much of the early part of the season, like the, and rightfully so, like the Celtics have been getting a ton of love. They deserved it, like, you know, in the wake of that injury, the way that they managed to pick up the pieces and play as well as they did. Like, I'm not saying they didn't deserve the amount of love that they were getting. But there was just like a certain satisfaction in, you know, seeing everybody kind of come to the realization that they weren't as good as the Raps.
Oh, yeah. Didn't DeLon Wright outscore? I'm going to look at the box score right now, but I'm pretty sure DeLon Wright outscored, Kyrie Irving in that game. Let me see. Kyrie had 17. DeLon, 14. I would say he outplayed him, though. I would say he outplayed him in that game. CJ Miles was coming off the bench. I mean,
yeah, that was a crazy Lowry game, too. He was insane.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Six threes. Some free throws. Really set the tone early on. I love when Lowry comes out aggressive, man.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. All right, that could be the fifth one. A lot of good games this season. A lot of good games.
Yeah. Truly blessed, man.
Really has been, man. What a fantastic year. All right. We don't really need to preview next week's game. Like, the rest of the last two games here, I mean, like, they'll go to Detroit. They're going to win in Detroit. They always have energy when they go to Detroit. And also, like, Detroit lost to Memphis today. Yo, they allowed Memphis to score 130. Memphis!
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
The Memphis Grizzlies, man.
One thing I will say is if like the Raps decide they really want to play Miami in the first round, then there's kind of a chance that they'll be able to make that happen by beating Miami in that last game of the season.
Interesting. Yeah, that's true.
Because so I think the Heat have the tiebreaker over both the Bucks and the Wizards, which would mean Bucks and the Wizards both have to go 2-0. Right. But the Heat get the Thunder next, so they could very much lose that game. And
the Thunder could also very much lose that game. I hate the Thunder,
100%.
Man. 100%. I hate that team. I really want to see that team miss the playoffs. We'll talk about it on Pound the Rock.
Yeah, I look forward to that. Yeah. But yeah, so if both the Bucks and the Wizards get to 44 and the Heat lose that game to the Thunder, then yeah, the Raps could control their own destiny as far as their first round opponent.
That's in Miami too? Oh, yeah. Oh man. OKC is definitely losing that game.
I'm excited to see, man. They're very trick or treat.
They really are. Yo, oh man. Yeah, damn. If OKC misses the after all this.
Well, they got a game left against Memphis, which As inconsistent as they've been, I don't think they're going to lose that game. So I think they'll be fine. They'll get in.
Who knows, man? Memphis is dangerous nowadays.
True.
You don't know
dropping who these... 130, dropping 130 on the Pistons?
Yeah. I mean, you don't know who these guys are.
Yeah. Marshawn Brooks has been lighting it up.
Kobe Simmons.
Who?
20 points. 7 assists. That's all you need to know. Marshawn Brooks with a small face back in the NBA. 25 points. Treating this as like the Chinese Basketball Association. Oh man, yeah. All right, let's take a break and then we'll answer some Twitter questions.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers. Accidents happen, and when they do, you'll want a lawyer who will stand up to the insurance company and fight for your rights. In case of emergency, have this name in your back pocket: Goldfinger, Brian Goldfinger. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you.
Welcome back to the second half of the podcast. If you're still here and you want more NBA content, you should check out Pound the Rock. It's going to come out tomorrow. This is the third of many plugs for the upcoming podcast. But seriously, it's an NBA podcast. I mean, if you're listening to this one, you might as well listen to the next one. So check that out. I'll tweet it out. I'm sure Wolfon will tweet it out. You know, if you have the score alerts, which you should get the score app and subscribe to NBA alerts. You probably get an alert there too, so there's a lot of way to find it. So it's up on iTunes too. You know, that sort of took a while to get the podcast up on iTunes, but it's up there and you can find us. So listen to that podcast. But in the meantime, you're listening to this current podcast, and we are going to take your Twitter questions. And, you know, as always, hit us up at Raptors Republic. Oh, man. First one comes from Karan Sharma. What do the Raptors have to do to finally win game one of the playoffs?
Just be themselves. Like,
not panic. Don't shit your pants.
Yeah, honestly. Like, they, you know, that's, I think, going to be the biggest thing. They're really good. They, by now, should know that they're really good. Mm-hmm. And I think you just hope that if they come out a little bit cold, or, you know, if it just feels like the game's starting to get away from them a little bit, that they don't, that they aren't, like, haunted by the ghosts of game one past.
Mm.
And that they remember who they are, like, that they're the best team in the Eastern Conference, and that whoever they're playing against has no business being on the floor with them. Like, they honestly, like, there's no excuse at this point. Like, they can't lose another game one. They just can't. It's enough already. I don't know what specifically they can do. Like, just be prepared. You know, like,
that's prepared as they can be. That's it. Yeah. No, but there seriously, just don't shut the pants. That's it, right? And I think I don't want to put it on one player, but in a lot
starts
of
with Kyle.
Yeah, it's a lot of it starts with Kyle, right? But here's the thing: this season, the Raptors have won a lot of games without Kyle Lowry scoring the way he needs to score necessarily. So it's a bonus. It's a huge bonus. If Kyle Lowry can come out there and start spraying threes or whatever, game over. It's game over. But you know, traditionally the Raptors' game one defense has been fine. It's just like Kyle Lowry doesn't score well, and the Raptors struggle with scoring. And you know, they get into this weird funk. They scrap. They get back into the game, and then they lose. You know, the Raptors have won a lot of games without. I know it's already stressful. I can hear that. Yeah. That sigh. This is a lot of stress on that sigh.
I just remember like feeling so confident last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being in Jurassic Park.
Yeah. You, me, and Josh.
We were feeling good, and man, I just like I will remember that feeling, man, of that confidence just slowly seeping out of my body.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, watching Kyle turn into a shell again, and like just feeling like I couldn't believe that it was happening again.
Matthew Dellavedova.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah.
This is the year it ends. I'm calling it.
This is the year it ends. That's why we got to back up Kyle and Fred VanVleet, okay? If Spotify Premium Kyle is not doing it, we can listen to Spotify with ads, Kyle. Next one from Josh, our guy. Yeah, there you go. Whose phone is the most important for the front office to take away this postseason? Previous years, Patrick Patterson or Gervais Vasquez?
I don't know, man. Look, I don't know if I have an answer to that question.
Probably Serge, bro. Just chill on Snapchat.
Yeah, okay.
Just no Snapchats for like 2 weeks, or not 2 weeks, a month. I Serge can't even go that far. There's no way.
I don't know, man. I had like a people really dump on Serge for how much he Snapchats, but like I feel like
it's just funny, man, to see him send so many thirsty snaps. Everything he does is like a very sensual snap. It's
just crazy. Like, you know, if that's what makes him happy, like I don't want to I don't want to take it away from him. Like, okay. He's got to go to his happy place.
That's true. Man, imagine Serge Ibaka's DMs. That's oof.
Yeah, I don't want to imagine.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. All right, you know what? You're right. You know what? We can't deprive Serge of that. I don't want Serge showing up unhappy and stuff.
No.
I don't know. Probably CJ Miles. Don't look at your DM, CJ Miles. Don't look at what Lauren's tweeting about you. It's probably gonna be very supportive.
Yeah,
it's very sweet.
Has she been tweeting about him?
Yeah, it's great.
Well, I don't follow her on Twitter, so
you should. What's it? Well, I'm gonna shout out the handle. It is LSM. Yeah, that's the Twitter name. I am Lauren Miles.
Yeah, word. I got it.
Yeah, she's a good follow. Next one from Assad. Would you rather the Raptors sweep through the Eastern Conference or spot Philly a game in the Eastern Conference Finals so we can celebrate the Eastern Conference Trophy at the ACC? It'd be really funny for the Raptors to celebrate the Eastern Conference Trophy right before the Finals. It just would be peak Raptors to be like, yeah, we did it. And it's like, wait, hold up. You still gotta play. I'd be, yeah.
No, I mean, realistically, though, that...
We're losing to LeBron in the second round. Let's be real about this.
Man, all right. Yeah, like, to answer the question, I would definitely be comfortable spotting them a game so that the celebration could be at home.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I would set up for the championship. When the Raptors beat the Houston Rockets in 5 games...
that's when you spot them a game.
Yeah. Give Houston game 4. After it's like 3-0, all right, here you go. Like what the Cavs did, or like what the Warriors did last year.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
A gentleman's sweep.
Yeah. This one from Amin Amin. What are the chances of the Raptors getting a WNBA team?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard anything about that actually.
That's the thing. It's weird to have never heard anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like we definitely have the infrastructure to support something like that.
Yeah,
like, look at the support for the 905. People are driving by the busload to go to the Erie to watch the Erie BayHawks lose the 905 as the 905 advance to the Eastern Conference or the NBA or the G League Finals, whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it would be, I think, a pretty long process. Obviously, mm-hmm. it would take like a few years, especially since, like, as far as I know, you know, there's nothing like that in the works. So I don't know. A lot would obviously have to go into that. Would MLSE own the team? And like, you know, is WNBA looking to expand and like add another team? Or would it be like a relocation? I don't know. A lot of mm-hmm. questions, but I think it's a great idea. Like, I feel like the city should have a WNBA team for sure. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah, definitely. This one from Darth Lean. What do you think of Zach Lowe teasing you, Will, on the pod on his hot take about the and his hot take about the future of Pascal? It was just, I mean, look, he misread the tweet. It's cool. Whatever. That's fine. It happens. What I said was, it was a shame the Raptors would end a great regular season with, you know, no shows, like in the Cavs game and in the Celtics game and in the Cavs game. I did not mean to say the Raptors season was ending. That's ridiculous. They were literally going to the playoffs. Like, so, no, it was good. It was good.
Press is good press, man.
All press is good press. You're right. You and I literally tweet or text each other about this.
Yeah.
Zach, come on this podcast, please. Zach, please. I know you're in Toronto all the time. Come on this podcast.
Yeah, he was just here, right?
I'm sliding on you publicly now.
He's here for the Celtics and Pacers games.
Good games to come to.
Yeah.
And then the Pascal thing. I mean, we've talked a lot about Pascal. Do you think Pascal can be an all-star?
Yeah, I do. I think like the one significant hole in his game right now is his shooting. Yeah. So I think what Zach said was like if he becomes a passable 3-point shooter, you know, like 35% 3-point shooter, like guys have to guard him out on the perimeter.
Mm.
He can be an all-star, and I totally think that that's true because he has all the other tools. And he has developed those tools in like a pretty astonishing period of time, you know, it's happened really quickly. So yeah. That gives me hope that he's going to be able to just continue improving at a pretty rapid rate, and I don't see why he can't get there, you know, as long as the shot comes around, which, you know, God willing, it will.
The man started playing basketball like 6 years ago.
Yeah, it's mental.
Yeah, he's got a lot of time. Next one from Keon. Why do you think some American media go so hard at the Raptors? I've been thinking, and I don't really recall it being so, quote, venomous until the East Finals run year. That's the other year. I think most of it boils down to Americans love feeling superior to Canadians, and they love making these jokes. That's it. And it's easy to joke about a team like the Raptors who, you know, have looked less of themselves in the playoffs. So, like, a lot of it does come from that. I think, look at when the Raptors were beating the breaks off the Bucks, right? They were chanting USA. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the sentiment is pretty clear. Like, they just
want... Okay, but those are, like, fans in Milwaukee. I feel like...
No, but I mean, you know, like, if you're Canadian, you go down to the United States, people love making jokes about Canadians. Like, just... It's a thing. It's not a necessarily malicious thing. I just think people like making jokes about how somewhat inferior Canadians are.
I don't think that's connected to why people like to hate on the Raptors.
I don't know. That's my theory. That's my theory.
Okay.
What's your theory?
My theory is that, like, to me, it feels like the same as it was for the Hawks. Just being this, like, perpetually...
But do people really clown the Hawks like that?
I mean, what do you hear when people talk about sort of, like, being on, like a treadmill team, or like a team that's, you know, good but not great? It's like they get compared to being the mid-2000s Hawks, who, like, topped out in the second round.
Okay.
Or, you know, if you're, like, a good team that gets the one seed but is destined to just be, like, beaten by LeBron, you get compared to being, like, the 2015 Hawks. Like, that team is used as an example of, like, a team that was basically a fraud, you know? That was, like, a nice little story but was destined to basically flame out when it mattered.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty much the same thing with the Raptors, is, like, they have these great regular seasons. They don't really play up to that level in the playoffs. For a long time, until this season, they were kind of a drag to watch. Kyle and DeMar can be fairly annoying in the way that they foul bait. The Raps do, like, whine to the officials a lot, I think. Like, there are a lot of different reasons I think you could pick out as to why people would just, like, objectively not like the Raptors that have nothing to do with Canada.
Mm.
But my feeling mostly is just that they... I don't know. I think at a certain point that, like, there's a fatigue. So it's like a fatigue watching the Raptors every year, like, have these good regular seasons and then, you know, for it inevitably to not add up to anything except, like, a disappointing playoff exit. And I feel like until that changes, that's the reputation that they're going to wear.
Okay. I think that's fair. It's probably a bit of both. But I really do think that, like, Americans really do love to joke on Canadians, and the fact that this is the only Canadian team, like, I don't know, it's just easy. Maybe it's not even top of mind, but, you know, I think it plays a factor in it.
Yeah, good.
Man, that's a lot of these other playoff questions. I mean, look, there's gonna be a playoff preview, like, come on, man. Okay, alright, how about this one, last one, Mr. Chin. With all the talk of where LeBron will go, why is there never mention of LeBron to Toronto? He said he will fit really nicely here. Yeah, of course.
He'd fit nicely a lot of places.
Yeah, literally anywhere.
I don't know. I can't, I guess I can't really answer that except to say, honestly, until maybe right now, I don't feel like Toronto is a place that has offered LeBron a better basketball situation than, you know, any other number of places that he could go if he so chose.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like at this point the Raptors could offer LeBron, like, a pretty good situation, like, depending, obviously, they have to clear a ton of cap space to sign him, or they get him a sign and trade or something.
Yeah, don't worry. Sign and trade Serge, bro. That's it. That's it. You get a 3-and-D, you know, power forward to put beside Kevin Love. It's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I don't know, man. I don't have an answer. Yeah. I just think that, I don't know, man. I mean, it's part of it is a reputational thing, to be honest. Like, the Raptors as a franchise, I feel like, still have a lot of catching up to do. As far as just, like, you know, having, like, cachet and,
being
pedigree.
Game one.
Yeah. And so there's an element of that that factors into it. And I think, I don't know, there's other things, like, you know, the Canadian market compared to the American market, like the weather compared to the weather in, say, LA or Miami, the taxes. I don't know, man, like, whatever you want to throw out there, I'm sure there are reasons. But I don't know. Do you have anything to add?
No, I think, yeah, all those factors are exist and whatever. And I think, yeah, I mean, Toronto's a great market and the Masai side of many times, but, and I truly do believe, like Masai does, that, it's going to be a crazy hype that's going to be tapped into when that true superstar comes through. And you know, with all due respect to Kyle and DeMar, they're not really on that level. But I just think that person has to be homegrown. Like, it had to be like that Wiggins scenario, which is it's good that we didn't get Wiggins, to be honest. It's good that we didn't tag to get Wiggins, but you know, like if RJ Barrett came through and, you know, was a top three player in the league and he was doing what he was doing, like look at what Vince, like the Vinsanity era. And that was just to establish the popularity of basketball in Toronto. And so, well, I mean, basketball was already popular at that time, but like really establish it as a basketball product to be popular, not just the sport itself. And you know, you fast forward 20 years, all the infrastructure that's been built up, the arena that we have, the fan base, I mean, all the media outlets. I mean, like, Raptors fans complain about, like, coverage. I mean, like, look how much local coverage you have. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's really insane how much coverage you get, man. You know, so, yeah, I think the right star will come along at that time, but it has to be a homegrown guy. It can't be LeBron just coming here for a weird little tour. But I think our best bet, honestly, to pitch LeBron is just to say, Donald Trump is not the president of this country. And wherever you sign, Trump's still going to be president for at least 2 more years. Well, unless he gets impeached. I really doubt that. But I mean, like, yeah, that's probably the best pitch to LeBron. I don't think he necessarily takes that.
No, I mean, I don't think, like, first of all, I don't think, in a way, I almost feel like that would be like an abdication of responsibility for him. Like, he's,
true.
I think, done a really good job of, like, speaking up. And speaking up against, you know, the kind of crazy shit that's been going on in that administration and in the States right now. Mm-hmm. So, I applaud him for that. And I feel like he's really embraced that, you know, like I think he enjoys being like more of a spokesperson. And, you know, having more of like a kind of political profile.
Yeah.
I think it's a good look for him. So,
true.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
He's not coming to Toronto.
No, he's not coming to Toronto. Come on, what are you guys saying, man? Come on. As much as I would love it, it's not happening. We got OG. Let's just stick with OG, man. It's fine. We could. Anyway, well, fun. This has been fun.
Yeah, man.
It's been so fun.
I'll do it again tomorrow.
Independently, yeah. If this podcast has been so fun, I would want to listen to another hour of us talking together about basketball. And you can do that tomorrow on Pound the Rock. Download that podcast. Please download it. I don't even know if I need to beg that hard. If you like this podcast, you'll like that podcast for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you're really embracing the spirit of the title of the podcast. That's how aggressively you're pushing it right now.
That's right.
Chipping away.
We named the podcast very, very much in Dwayne Casey's honor. There's even another segment in the podcast that's also named in Dwayne Casey's honor. No podcast has given that much respect to Dwayne Casey ever. We'll say that much. So.
Yeah.
All right. Wolf on. As always,
thanks,
follow.
Oh,
yeah. Follow Wolf on Twitter. That's.
Yeah. Joey_W.
There you go.
Thanks again for having me on, man. Always a pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks to you for, you know, being available for sure. I'm slacking so hard with this podcast. I'm so tired. I'm just tired, but, seriously, it's always great to have you on. And yeah, in terms of the listeners, there will be a podcast previewing the playoffs either Thursday or Friday when the Raptors know you know who the first round opponent is going to be. It's, you know, going to be one of Milwaukee, Miami, or Washington. Whenever that's determined, I will call up Blake. I will make sure I find a time that works with Blake. We'll talk, you know, through the playoffs, talk through the angles, and, you know, and really just preview the playoffs in depth. But in the meantime, enjoy these last two games. Thanks again, Wolfon, for coming on, and we'll be back later in this week. Peace.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.
Regina King for Cadillac Escalade. When people ask, Regina, do you like to compete? I say, bring it on.
Those are the moments that drive you to achieve more. And when you win, you keep reaching higher. To me, that's what the Cadillac Escalade represents. It's always evolving in technology, in design, everything. Because success isn't the end. It's just the first step to what comes next.
The 2021 Cadillac Escalade. Never stop arriving.